a destination. It is not the destination. And last week, we had the opportunity to put what I would call a point of view about the future out on the table. And so think about when digital business marries up with what I'll call digital intelligence. We said it is the dawn of a new era about being a cognitive business, when every product, every service, how you run your company can actually have a piece that learns and thinks as part of it. You will be a cognitive business.
So the digital is just the wires, basically. You're collecting the data, and then you have to make something out.
And then you take this world, when I say digital intelligence, some shorthand it to artificial intelligence. I think it's much more than that. You put those two together, and I say cognitive is both an era of technology, and it is well a business model. So, so this thought, I mean, I would take everyone back in time. When the internet first came out, and people at first talked about browsing, I know as we were, again, reinventing ourselves, we said, it will be about more than browsing.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, March 10th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a chilly 24 degrees with light snow here in upstate New York. So the last few days have been a bit hairy. We had some crazy weather here, 81 mile an hour gusts, and school has been out for the last 2 days, did a lot of damage around the area, ripped trees out by the roots, took out all of the power, so just about every traffic light is out here, and there have been quite a number of large accidents that have happened, so everybody stay inside. You know, they even had a, state of emergency up here in the first night. So it's been kind of hairy. But anyway, we're back to normal. So where do we leave off on Wednesday? We titled the show Trump Spying Vault 7, Day Zero, Backdoors, Self-Learning AI, and Dystopia. What more could you ask for? We have talked about all kinds of crazy things with that Vault 7 release on Monday. Things have been verified that we had known for a very long time. We had, postulated, and I think mine was way more of a postulation just because being in the tech industry, you know, I heard the anti-media guys a couple times invoke John McAfee from McAfee Antivirus about how he's said for a long time has been going on. Yeah, I mean, anybody back from those days, back from the early to mid-90s, who were involved in the industry from the ground up, knew the day that happened. And I outlined in the last show about that antitrust lawsuit with Microsoft and Netscape Navigator, started back in the mid-90s. The Justice Department had pushed Bill Gates very hard, and he was not prepared to answer some questions, and there was a lot of taped testimony, which I included in the notes of the show from Wednesday, that show him being kind of snotty, definitely someone that you weren't expecting, something you weren't expecting from Bill Gates. I don't know, he wasn't seeming very professional. He kind of resorted back to childhood. I don't know, it was almost like an ornery teenager. But the interesting part about all that is, and I've told you guys before, I remember the very day when the backdoor keys got handed over to the feds for the beginnings of what is now end-to-end surveillance. And I'm going to tell you something I discovered, and this I did not realize. There have been multiple antitrust lawsuits against Microsoft. The first one was the Netscape, and then there was another one. There was some European thing as well. But those were later in the 2000s. But I took a look at the U.S. versus Microsoft lawsuit, and I also took a look at the settlement. They had published that out there, kind of read through. And one of the things, I couldn't find that picture, by the way, of Bill Gates with that look on his face that I told you the day I saw it. And we followed Bill like he was the second coming. So I remember distinctly, I couldn't find that picture of the look on his face because you would know. You would know as I did. But I did find a quotation. He says, and this is when they are interviewing him after this quote-unquote settlement with the DOJ, a lot of this is very new territory, he says, and yet there were concerns So new rules had to be created, and Microsoft has agreed to those new rules. And, you know, those new rules, I can guarantee you, went along with handing over the backdoor keys to the feds. And everything would be A-okay there, Billy. And I'm going to tell you something else I discovered. So I happened to start looking. I was like, well, when did this all happen? And, I was very, very surprised to see that all of these stories talking about the settlement, once it was all done, happened to be October of 2001. Now, if we remember what happened on September 11th, 2001, and we remember who was in charge, and you remember that it was all in the name of keeping you safe, oh, it makes a lot of sense now. They said to Billy, hey, you know what? This has been going on 4 or 5 years now, this antitrust suit, and we've had about enough of your antics, Mr. Bill Gates. So we're going to settle. We're going to tell you how it's going to go. And look, we got something going on here, and you are on every desktop across the world. You've made friends with all kinds of leaders of countries that our president hasn't even been to many years because we don't even have diplomatic ties with those countries. So I'm going to tell you what, Bill. We're going to let you off with a couple slaps on the wrist, maybe a smack to the side of the head. You don't have to admit wrongdoing, and he didn't. But you're going to have to give us the backdoor keys to make sure that none of those terrorists, quote-unquote terrorists, are out there. We'll let you keep your company together. So, guys, there you have it. Ding, ding, ding. And I don't know if you want to argue with me, you can, but I lived it. I watched it firsthand. But I didn't realize that that settlement happened October 2001, and that just seems a little too damn convenient for me. So let's fast forward now. Bloop. How many years? Well, let's see. 2001 to 2017. 16 years into the future. And now every back door seems to be open, known and unknown. And we discover that all this vulnerability knowledge of applications that are out there, these vulnerabilities are known by the feds and these professional hacking organizations, but no one is alerting the manufacturers of the products that have these big, huge holes. Oh, no, they're allowing those huge holes to stay open to allow the public to be hacked without their knowledge, with information being stolen. Well, we got a problem now, Clyde, because these WikiLeaks, this Vault 7 WikiLeak release, supposedly came from someone anonymously, some intern anonymously within the CIA. Has really exposed us as not being a very nice country. Now, we've known for a long time that there is somebody else pulling the strings. The president's always been kind of a puppet. Just stick your hand up in there and make him talk. And, I mean, it's been that way for a very long time, but I don't think we ever realized how much the alphabet agencies have been pulling the big fat ropes, not just the little dangly strings for the puppeteer. And these guys, CIA, the NSA, DHS, people like Keith Alexander, Clapper, all those other clowns out there, they're not really clowns because they can blow your computer up remotely. They've all become pretty dangerous. These are the men, the unelected men who live in the shadows, who are joining the ranks of the men that have been running this country for a very long time. It's got to be pretty frightening to you because guess what? They have dirt on every single one of us. And now these vulnerabilities are being utilized to take this next evolution of the internet and of the shape-shifting immune system of the internet that they're working on to secure it all. Remember, it had to be a big, fat, horrifying breach to make you turn around and start begging now for them to come save us. Oh, my God, they've been spying on everything. We need to make it more secure, and that's where DARPA Dan comes in. Talked about DARPA Dan a whole ton of times on this show, and I mentioned him again on Wednesday. DARPA Dan with his Mimic software to be able to catch criminals on the dark web. But DARPA Dan, who now has slid over to Google, they are working with Carnegie Mellon on the shape-shifting immune system of the internet. We have DARPA, who helped finance that Cyber Grand Challenge this summer in Vegas. Carnegie Mellon won. That Mayhem software, we found out, has been released commercially. They were starting with a big router vendor that owns 99% of the backbone of the internet to identify holes and vulnerabilities in their iOS software. I got to tell you, those honking routers, and they could go for $500,000 if you stacked one of those puppies, one of those Big Ten card chassis. Those are no joke. Back in the day, the 7400 was like a big honker. Probably, I don't know, I'm sure they got bigger ones than that now. But, you know, that stuff is a big deal. You know, you are talking about not just businesses, but internet service providers that are running it all. They have firewalls on them. They're protecting large back ends. You have routers like that that are protecting the cloud data, the place where all of your personal information is now being funneled. It'll be your consciousness in the future if Kurzweil has his way. Those routers are the very first tip of the iceberg that this mayhem, also known as All Secure, I think is what they rename themselves now that they are a commercial company. And this is that Mayhem software. Mayhem is a robot hacker, and it can crack any code. I'm going to take a little look at Mayhem really quick. Now, I wish you would have heard the clip I was playing at the beginning of the show, because it was good old Ginny Rometty, talking with Fortune Magazine about how artificial intelligence kind of grew, and it is now cognitive computing and being integrated into every single back end of every single business right now. And if you don't integrate, you won't be able to compete in the future. Open your arms, people, and accept the digital, because it is coming, and it is coming for you, and it's about ready to turn the world on its head. And she kind of explained how that was going to happen. Really a bummer, because I wanted to start the show out with a clippy. We'll see if we can get that in there. Anyway, this is out of Techworm. Mayhem is a robot hacker, and it can crack any code. This is utilizing artificial intelligence. This awesome, and this is not from me, this is from Kavita Earair. This awesome robot hacker known as Mayhem can crack any programming code. The future world truly begins 2 AI, robots and machine learning. We have known about botnets and robots, but now here comes Mayhem, a software program that can hack any code. According to its developers, Mayhem is meant to be the best option, yeah, of course, to automatically defend against cyber attacks, and it will soon be launched into the real world to fix, quote unquote, the internet. Now, mind you, this is dated February 2nd, and we started seeing fishy things start occurring. Oh, guess what? Last week, what day was it? Maybe it was Wednesday in February 1st. Oh, maybe, just maybe. I don't know, there was lots of crazy stuff happening on the web all last week. So, you know, they've done it, now they let us know. For those unfamiliar, Mayhem has won a $2 million hacking prize at the Cyber Grand Challenge held at the DEF CON Hacker Conference in Las Vegas last year. And yeah, that was hosted by DARPA. The event was staged by the Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, to create an AI-based autonomous cybersecurity system that can patch itself, watch for intrusions, and hack other systems, all with minimal human interaction. So, again, problem, reaction, solution. How amazing they've had Mayhem waiting in the wings. How amazing we had this huge release of data. just a day or two after we had the sitting president of the United States start accusing the last sitting president of the United States of signing a warrant to tap him, and everyone said it was ridiculous, and then this huge trove of information comes out showing, hey, guess what? You're not the only one being bugged. It's everybody. Equal opportunity. But as all this is happening, oh, the internet is so damn secure. Don't worry about it. We have mayhem. I mean, this is just unreal. And, I mean, it's going to not only be able to bag, tag, and track, but go back and counterattack. Now, remember, the internet was deemed a battlefield by Keith Alexander. When Obama was in office, we had, oh, the North Korea attack, quote unquote. We had, oh, the Russians hacking. This is all bullshit. We already knew that it was some sort of redirect to be able to try and make it look like it was someone other than it was doing the hacking. We had assumed it was our Homeland Security or the alphabet agencies, NSA, CIA, FBI, one of them, or one of the military branches, or Microsoft Cyber Patrol, or the Israeli Defense Force, who knows? Could be any of them, guys. The HG, what are they called? GQ? No, I don't know what they call them. What are they called in England? Somebody keep it down. But guys, this is, you know, or the Chinese, for God's sakes. This is the 21st century. It is no longer nuclear weapons. Like I've said before, nukes are just so passe. It is cyber warfare. It is stealing information. It is stealing not only personal information, not only spying on you, not only financial information, but also business secrets. You know, we have IBM who sold off their ThinkPad line, and I think they did their desktop line as well. I don't remember the name of the company, but they're owned by the Chinese. Oh, I used to know. And the federal government used to buy IBM notebooks and computers. They were huge on state contract and federal contract. And they're now banned. I looked this up before from that FBO.gov. You're not allowed to quote IBM machines anymore. And you want to know why? Because the Chinese own them. And they really worry about when they manufacture these chips and things, what type of devices, spying devices, they are putting in. Oh, GCHQ and MI6. Thank you, Michael. So we got to be careful of this. But hey, don't worry about it, because DARPA and the Central Lizard Pit, where Obama gave his speech about how this next administration is going to be running a country transformed by AI. Yes, Lenovo, thank you. It's early. I'm only on 3 or 4 sips of coffee. This country that's going to be transformed by AI, the title of that story really kind of struck me as the Twilight Zone episode that never left me, titled To Serve Man. I don't know if you've ever seen that one, but if you haven't, look it up. I'm sure it's on YouTube. To Serve Man was all about how this alien race came down and they were being all friendly with us and they were exchanging technologies with us and they were going to give us the cures to everything. We were traveling up and down to their spaceship to see the wonders, their technologies. And finally, just finally, somebody decoded the book that supposedly had all the cures in it. And guess what? At the very end, and I really don't want to spoil it for everyone, but you got to watch it anyway because it'll give you chills even if I do. At the very end, someone translated the book and they come out and they said, oh no, To Serve Men is a cookbook. It wasn't about helping us at all. It was a cookbook on how to cook, man. And they were sending us up there to be dinner. Well, I see this as a very, very similar situation. Here we are. Open your arms to this promise that we're going to keep you safe from all of these self-orchestrated disasters that we've had. Remember, back just a few years ago, it wasn't much in the way of hacking. I mean, we used to get some Slavic nations. Romania was one, or Czech Republic we used to get. When I was working in corporate America as running the e-business division, you know, we would get some hack attacks every once in a while. We can go in, bag and tag. They actually forced us. There was one point there at the very end where they forced us to put up together a report, and they had to submit it to the FBI. It was a requirement. If you had a hack attack, thank God I didn't have to put my name on it, but I did have to put together a biopsy of what we found after we investigated. But we weren't talking insanity like we're talking now, where everything is vulnerable. You know, you had some patches. You did some vulnerability testing. I mean, I still have some of that software and this machine, as a matter of fact. Well, you could just point it to an IP address, it'll scan, and then it spits you out a report as to where it found your holes. Then, as a good network administrator, you go patch them. That's the way it worked, but now it seems the whole world has gotten behind it, and we have to find a solution. So, again, DARPA sprinkle funding, $2 million, the Carnegie Mellon team wins. The same Carnegie Mellon where Obama gave a lecture about how artificial intelligence is going to transform the country. And that software that won, named Mayhem, is now turned into a startup, sprinkle funding with taxpayer dollars, called For All Secure. I called it All Secure the other day, but that's another company. This is called For All Secure, co-founded by Carnegie Mellon professor David Brumley and two of his PhD students. Now, Mayhem is beginning to test its hacking skills to work in the real world. A company, wink, wink, has started familiarizing Mayhem to automatically find and patch flaws in certain kinds of commercial software, including that of internet devices such as routers. And this is the story I had to laugh at, where it's like, oh, this unnamed router company. Well, we all know who it is. In order to find out if Mayhem is able to help companies recognize and fix vulnerability in their products more swiftly and broadly, the company is carrying out tests for the same with an unidentified partner, along with internet device manufacturers. And the main focus is on solving the problem of firms who are required to invest considerable resources to supporting years of previous merchandise with safety updates. And that is true. I mean, Cisco routers, every single router has a, I don't know, it's a part number, serial number. It's got an operating system running on it. And there are different features. I mean, there's like thousands, well, maybe not thousands, I exaggerate, but maybe 20 or 30 different operating systems for the very same router, depending upon what features you're running, depending upon what cards you have in there, depending upon, I don't know, all kinds of fancy schmancy stuff. And each one costs a different amount of money. And each one has different patches and updates. And yeah, you need some high-end certifications to be able to even know what you're doing to program those puppies. So I would say Cisco is a good target for this. But on the other hand, we are giving, and I talked about this the other day, the sheep, the wolf in sheep's clothing, some more of the backdoor keys, people. These are the backbones to everything and anything. If you own the backbone keys to the internet, if you know every little in and out and secret back door, well, you could get in anywhere. This literally gives the federal government back doors to the cloud, even. Unless, and I would hope, well, all right, I'm not going to say that, because Amazon Cloud, Jeff Bezos, we discussed this many times before, Jeff Bezos and the CIA cut a deal quite a number of years ago. And he built them a parallel Amazon cloud, so they're all chummy-chummy. And now he runs the government mouthpiece, Washington Post. So I guess we're not going to worry too much about Amazon getting hacked, because it really doesn't have to get hacked. They could just open up those doors. But there might be some other providers out there, and I don't really think there are too many holdouts anymore. I was trying to explain to a friend the other night this whole Bill Gates thing and when the day happened that he gave the feds the backdoor keys, when the world changed for the internet and for the balance of power in general. And he was arguing with me, and I'm going to tell you what. I lived it, okay? I lived it. I saw it. And one of the things that people don't realize is that back in the 90s, the tech companies were not, they were not federal government friendly. We were the geeks who were going to inherit the earth. We were all learning. And the feds, all they wanted to do was to get their grubby little hands in there and find a way to make money on it. They wanted, when Z-commerce got launched, they wanted a part of the tax pie. They wanted sales tax. They wanted to bag, tag, and track. Oh, my God, they wanted to track your book purchases. Remember, it started with the library card. It was after Georgie Porgy Bush. Then it became Amazon. They wanted access to your book purchase records to see if you were figuring out how to monkey wrench or do fun things with fertilizer, you know. But the thing is, most of these companies did not play ball with the feds. It was a fight, and the feds had to subpoena, and you had FISA courts and all that crap going on. He did point out one thing to me, though, is during the administration of Bill Clinton, we had that whole thing going on with phone records and who would be able to get access to and bug the phone system. I guess there was something after the Oklahoma City bombing, and don't quote me on this because it's from my friend giving me a lesson last night. But after the Oklahoma City bombing, he said Bill Clinton had passed some bill that allowed them to open the back door to listening in on phone calls and utilizing that information all in the name of keeping us safe. And I know for a fact, though, in 2004, I believe, there was some big class action lawsuit that happened against AT&T for that very thing, because they had been bending over and handing the records to the feds. And people were coming back crying that it was a breach of privacy and that they shouldn't have allowed them to do that because they didn't have search warrants and all this other stuff. And out of all of this, and this came back a couple times, I don't know if it was a class action or what it was, but they were going after the phone companies. And finally the feds, and this was during Obama's reign, we've seen now this progression to where not only the phone network, and trust me, I was, in my day when I was engineering, my job was to merge the SS7 phone network from the perspective of the good old copper lines with the digital and make your IP everything instead of having two separate networks. So that's where my world kind of lived. Once all that merged, there was no difference anymore. And I remember the alphabet agencies were having a fit because they couldn't distinguish between data and voice when it was all packaged in an IP packet and sent across the internet. It all kind of looks the same. But when Obama was in office, and they were trying to roll out this Obamacare thing, which I got a side note on that, but I don't want to get derailed. Maybe at the end I'll mention it for a laugh. But this Obamacare thing, and he had all of the heads of the big tech companies all come to the White House. And they were having a few discussions about privacy and about cover our asses because our end users are bitching that the federal government seems to have their hands in everywhere and they're demanding records. And they're pointing at us, and it's making us look bad, and our shareholders are getting pissed off, and our stock price is being affected, federal government. You need to give us a promise that this is all in the name of national security, and we will not be held liable. And we're also going to tell all of our users that you are not spying on them anymore. We are not complying. Wink. See? It was in the very beginning. They weren't complying. Back in the 90s, oh, no. When you saw Bill Gates giving testimony to the DOJ, and he was being a snotty little pisspot, and it was weird because he was, like, rocking in his chair, too. Like, he definitely was having some issues there. I think I would be, too, though. They were grilling him pretty hard, and that went on for a really long time. But they were not playing ball with the feds. And when Billy took that settlement in October of 2001, and they told him, Bill. You can take all your marbles back home. We're not going to take any of them. But we're going to slap you around a little bit. And you're going to give us the keys to the car. We're going to still let you drive. But we are going to have someone in the passenger seats watching everything that's going on. And, you know, that day was the first day that I really truly believe that the tech industry was usurped by the feds. And now it's gotten way beyond that. I mean, we saw that tech meeting. I don't remember. I don't have it up here. I'm just kind of talking off the top of my head from memory. But my memory's pretty good most of the time. I mean, it was all the big boys. It was the Amazons, the Googles, the Microsofts, the Apples, the whatever. Everybody who was anyone was there. They all made a big deal. And the feds said, oh, yes, no, 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 we won't be spying on you. And they came and they said, oh, no, we're not going to comply. You know, when the California bomber, they were trying to push to have his iPhone unlocked. And Apple's like, oh, no, 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 we're not going to do it. Guys, it was just a psyop. It's a good cop, bad cop. I told you that the other day. They've been playing this with us for a long time. Don't believe any of them. Okay, this is all one big consolidated plan that's been rolling out. You know, feel safe and put everything that your inner heart desires, all your inner thoughts and feelings, into digital media. Tell us how you feel. Talk to your friends. Speak about how angry you are, because at some point in the future, we're going to use it against you. As we're putting it into our 24/7 Amazon Cloud dossier of you. Anyway, I digress. So we're going back to Mayhem now. So Mayhem, apparently, they've started using in the commercial space. Mayhem is loose. What was the description of Mayhem? The company has started familiarizing Mayhem to automatically find and patch flaws in certain kinds of commercial software, including that of internet devices such as routers. But wait, we discovered from Vault 7 that the federal government had known about these holes. Hacking team had been identifying these holes and selling them to governments and law enforcement for a very long time so they could get a foot in the back door. And then they were not alerting the manufacturers to those holes. So, yeah, we're going to believe that Mayhem is for our own good, of course. Mayhem is going to take care of it all. Financed by DARPA. Again, another acronymed federal agency. And just people are so dumb. And I hate to say things like that, but really it's like people bump into walls these days. It's really just heartening. Yeah, I have a circle of friends and my listeners, the people who listen to UCY, all the great people who send us comments and give us donations, who actually believe in what we're doing. We are the thinkers that are left. We are the handful who still see the world the way that it is, who haven't been kind of mind-effed to believe the narrative that they're spinning for us. It makes me think of Obi-Wan. These are not the droids you are looking for. And all they got to tell us is on mainstream media through the news. Nope, nope, nope. This is what happened. And everybody just goes back to sleep. It's not true, people. People like me who are jumping up and down. And I got to tell you, I'm seeing more and more shows now where they're at least talking about some of this crazy CRISPR editing or merging of biology and technology. Good old Hal from Behind the Woodshed. Hal, I got to give you kudos, because I'll tell you, it really scares me when someone like you, who is beyond rational, starts discussing what you've discovered that is 100% what I've discovered. And you are showing a little bit of fear and alarm over this, because it makes me think, oh no, Joel, it's even worse than you thought. When people like that are beginning to notice and showing some fear, Hal wants to find a way to combat it. I don't know, anybody out there who is a biological, technical person who wants to help us find a way. Now, of course, you know, DARPA DARPA's already working on digital rights management for our genomes, so that might be the solution. I don't know about you, but I am not about ready to start putting any type of DARPA technology that messes with my DNA into my body. Anyway, so in the end, it comes down to this huge PSYOP that's going on. It comes into them creating these issues, and this is like the same cookie cutter pattern that they do for everything. But now, this is the end game. They got a whole handful of aces, and they're getting ready to throw them on the board. And each one is called disruptive technologies. It's going to turn the world on its head. You know, we used to laugh about robots coming to take all the jobs. Robots are coming to take everything, whether it is the ghost in the machine robot, that would be your AI, and things like Mayhem, the IE Skynets. We got the tin can robots. There'll be things like Atlas or that new, what they call them, Handle. The scary Atlas on wheels now that can jump feet in the air. Or it's going to be the new type of robot. And I think we're going to end the show with this in a little bit. Don't let me forget. I'm going to hit that story. And these are the skin jobs. These are the tin can robots that they grow artificial skin on. Make them look like humans, that whole anthropomorphizing to the nth degree. And they are working on that as well. Guys, this is going to come at us from every direction. We are seeing coffee baristas just get launched in San Francisco that can outdo any number of people. We have found that we got robot lawyer Ross, and we got robot judges. We read that on Wednesday, and they're going to decide whether or not you should get bail. Once you've been arrested, it makes it way easier for those judges. I mean, I don't know. Those judges have such a hard time being able to determine whether or not you're a flight risk just looking at your rap sheet. I mean, that's not too difficult, you would think. We have lawyers, attorneys, Wall Street we discovered as well. Restaurants, Arby's, no, Harvey's, that was one of them. There's just so much stuff, and it is coming faster and faster, and it's going to be soon programmers and white-collar jobs. We got oncologists with Watson at 20 cancer hospitals. The robots are coming. They absolutely are coming. So this Fortune interview with Ginni Rometty, I guess we're not going to be able to hear, but we can read the story underneath it. Google and IBM. And, of course, believe everything they say. They say, quote, we want artificial intelligence to help you, wink, not replace you. So don't get scared. Embrace it. Here it comes. In an era of maturing artificial intelligence technology, what does the future of the corporation look like? These are already the corporations who are in charge. And now it's not even going to be a corporate entity who's running the show. We're going to give it all kinds of back-end AI. Will the rise of the robots help us do our jobs better, or will it harm them? Well, this dynamic has become a mainstay of the dialogue around AI, with voices from technology visionaries such as Bill Gates and Stephen Hawking weighing in. But if Fortune's most powerful women international summit in Hong Kong, what? On Tuesday, and this was last Tuesday, leaders at two of the world's most powerful tech giants, and that would be IBM and Google, pushed back on those concerns. Again, these are not the droids you're looking for. Shh, go back to sleep. AI is intended to help and not hinder the human workforce, they said. AI is actually not new for us, says Vinit Narayanam, chairman of IBM India, whose Watson supercomputer has given rise to global acclaim. But technology always comes ahead of policy. Just as her boss, IBM CEO Ginni Rometty, has insisted, quote, it will not be man or machine. It'll be all of us. Consider a bank in Brazil that has 50 different products, she says. The average call center rep cannot handle 50 products. No, because they're dumb as tin cans now. We have the average attention span of a goldfish is groomed by our mobile devices. And you know what? Because the call center reps can't handle that anymore, well, don't worry about it because we're going to automate that job too. So we're using Watson in their call center, not to replace the call center rep, and I'm going to add in parentheses yet, but actually help the call center rep understand their products and their offerings and be able to serve that customer much better than he or she may have been able to. Leone Valentine, Managing Director of Sales and Operations at Google Hong Kong, likened the use of artificial intelligence to a murmuration when a startling flock of birds, take flight without any kind of pre-programmed system. The birds just know how to find the information in a murmuration. And they just kind of all fly together and it works. It's a fantastic analogy for what the future of an organization might look like. The Google executive also defended artificial intelligence as a means of supplementing human workers. Take, for example, a call center operator. And when you go and survey your customers about where they would like your staff to spend your time, it is not a problem solving, troubleshooting, credit issues, or billing, right? It is a help me, advise me, send me on the trip that I wanted to go. So Valentine says that since a lot of technology has been put in place, we are finding that we are finally getting to the place that has been the nirvana for the last 20 or 30 years in corporations, which is moving people to high value tasks, which is telling you guys, yeah, there's going to be much fewer of them, which is actually taking the intelligence of the organization and forming that human intelligence and where we need value-based judgments and real-time decision-making and a human touch, putting it back into the hands of the customer. You know what? Techno-babble bullshit, I say. That is just a spin to confuse you and tell you it's all going to be okay. Don't worry about it. We're putting it into the call centers and the oncology centers, into the judges of Wall Street and banking and tax preparing and everything else, and the baristas. Don't worry about it. They're not going to take all your jobs. Yes, they are. Trust me. They are. This is only the beginning. Machine learning and Microsoft Word is scarily good. They are now putting their new editor to be able to be a grammar Nazi into the new Office 365 version of Word. And that's got to be a little scary. Again, we know everything you type, everything you say is funneled to the cloud. Now let's put artificial intelligence into our word processing application. We know that they are already running a translator that's utilizing deep learning and Skype. Well, let's add it now to the world's most popular editing application for text. And it's going to do all kinds of great things if you use it. It's going to make sure that your words are perfect. This author says, I have been writing professionally since 2001, around 10,000 published articles now, but I'm still learning, I guess. And this isn't me, this is here. The new editor announced today from Microsoft, and this was March 5th, so this was 5 days ago. And available immediately if you select the Fast Insider option within Word under Settings is like hiring a grammar nanny. Yeah, just what we need, more nanny state to watch us. The editor scans all of your writing. Of course, it's to make your writing better, not to track what you're writing. No. Alerting you to your passive voice and to jargon. It can also identify words that, quote, express uncertainty. And, for example, in a document that is 50,000 words, it is a long story on that, but they kept using words like basically, maybe, over and over again. And they were then zapped because when you look back at this editor, it shows that they add clutter. But another interesting discovery. This author discovered that he's a champion of active voice. He was educated about the problem long ago, but he guess he forgot about it. So now words grammar Nazi. They call it the grammar nanny. I call it the grammar Nazi. And you know, when people do that to you, if you've ever had somebody who's a grammar Nazi, I try not to do that. I got my English degree, and I used to be like all smarty pants like that and annoy the shit out of people. But you know what? I don't do that anymore. I use it as my license to be able to slaughter the English language now, all in protest. But if you have a friend who is a grammar Nazi, you know how irritating it can be when they are correcting you real time during a conversation or whatever. So if you can imagine, especially if you're using Word a lot to write, how annoying it would be if the little grammar Nazi came up to correct you every time you made a mistake. All right, let's move forward before we run out of time, because it is Friday, and I unfortunately had to skip a day or two this week. I don't even remember. It was a long one. Another big boy in the tech industry is now taking artificial intelligence the next step. We know Facebook, Fedbook, as people call it. They've been using it for surveillance for a long time. They have a big artificial intelligence backend that's been looking at a lot of stuff. They've been playing with our emotions for a while, doing experiments psychologically to see how we react to things. And then they're taking all the data that we are inputting into Facebook and our interactions with our friends and interactions with the experiments that they are doing by adding things to our feed and feeding that into their AI machine to be able to do metrics on us, to be able to do pre-identification, personality profiling, that type of thing. I mean, don't think that they're not doing that to all of us on all the applications. The alphabets are all into personality profiling. But Facebook has now turned artificial intelligence to tackle suicides. So, of course, again, it's going to be to help you embrace the machine. It's going to help you. There was an unfortunate incident. This is very sad. Somebody actually committed suicide, I guess, on Facebook Live while they were doing a video. I don't remember that happening, but they say it did. It was pretty awful. But in response to that tragedy, Facebook has now come out and said that they are going to not only give the end users tools to be able to report somebody if they think they are going to be a danger to themselves or others in real time, they've already also given Facebook AI the ability to monitor offensive material in live streams, and they're going to be scanning posts to preemptively look for signs that somebody may be expressing suicidal tendencies by posts that they put on their Facebook page, so they may intervene before it is too late. Now, again, double-edged sword. I mean, that might be a good thing if that's what they're really going to use it for. But on the other hand, it also is very broad. We can scan everything. We can see if you're going to be a danger to yourself or others. Oh, look, he was so suicidal that he's going to go out and become a terrorist. He doesn't care if he takes out himself and 100 other people. You know, you can see how this could get out of control very easily. Well, another place where I've seen AI pop up just recently, we know all these tech billionaires who are investing in living forever. Many of them also have space programs. They all want to get off this rock. They're all in bed with the feds doing research like Elon Musk with NASA, utilizing some of their staff and some of their facilities. We got Jeff Bezos working with, who was he working with? Not the CIA on drones. With the FAA. The FAA on developing a new drone tracking system. So places like Amazon can have self-delivery drones But he's also got his Blue Origin project, where we're going to talk about reusable rockets to be able to deliver cargo in space. Well, astronomers now are deploying AI to unravel the mysteries of the universe. Remember, they are looking for Earth-like planets in a relatively near stance. So if we got to get off this rock, because things go awry here on this planet, they got some place to go. Just got to make you wonder. Should be pretty interesting, but they're going to scan the skies with AI. And we should wonder what they're going to find. All right, so now let's get to some meat and potatoes. I ran across a story the other day. Why the Internet of Things? And they are asking this question. Why shouldn't the Internet of Things? We've talked about that a lot of times. This is this endpoint device connectivity that is happening right now that places like DARPA are saying are so insecure because, you know, we've had baby monitors hacked and all this other stuff that we need to release the hounds, something like Mayhem, to be able to secure it all. And, of course, all these dumb end users out there don't know what they're doing, so we're going to have to do it for them. Well, now they are talking about imbuing Internet of Things devices, such as your fridge, your stove, your washing machine, your car, your thermostat, your lights, your door locks, soon to be you and me, once we get the medical devices, once we get our implantable Fitbits and nanobots in our blood. Yes, why shouldn't the Internet of Things have a layer of artificial intelligence? Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, we talked about enchanted objects before. I've discovered there's a lot out there about them, and we read a couple stories about that at one time. And that really would be thinking and reacting objects sitting on your desk, reacting to their environment, to your requests. And how frightening would that be if, like, every object had some sort of intelligence? You were surrounded by intelligent objects. I mean, honestly, this is like a worst nightmare come true. Combining artificial intelligence with the Internet of Things opens the world to unlimited technological potential. Yeah, it opens the world to unlimited spying, to unlimited attack, killing, turning you on and off, being able to do anything and everything without your intervention. I mean, in your sleep, your favorite writing pen could turn against you. And what if a hacker got control of it? Your smart pillow could jump on your face and hold itself down. I mean, I don't know, guys, but this is just a horrifying thought. Everything around you could potentially become smart and potentially controlled by somebody else. In this article, Rick Delgado, a freelance technology writer and commentator, explores why it makes sense to add an AI layer to the Internet of Things, possibly adding new possibilities and capabilities to both technologies. The Internet of Things is a powerful technological force. So many devices and activities in our personal and professional lives are already connected to it, from smartphones to activity trackers to huge manufacturing centers and medical devices, with more and more things being connected to the Internet of Things. And like I say, it's going to be the Internet of Everything every day and transforming how we live and work. But at the same time, artificial intelligence is also developing rapidly, with 80% of the world's largest companies now having incorporated some kind of cognitive technology into their products. AI trains computers to take on some human forms and tasks and expands the world of technological possibilities to combine machine learning and human creativity. But don't worry, they are not going to take all your jobs. The Internet of Things and AI go together like peanut butter and jelly, he says. You're my best friend. Doodly doodly doo. And with these two large technological movements, making waves around the world. It makes sense to combine them and add an AI layer to the Internet of Things. Combining these two opens new doors of possibilities, and both technologies can do a whole ton of things. You know, with the sheer amount of data that they are going to be collecting, you're going to need a superhuman brain to be able to make sense of that data. And again, your 24/7 home robot that spies on you. Now remember, on Wednesday, we ended the show with a story that was titled, Scientists Want to Build a Super Fast Self-Replicating Computer That, quote, grows as it computes. Well, let's add to that then, artificial intelligence and adding a layer of that to all of the Internet of Things. And guys, we are in some deep shit. You're going to be able to be held for the authorities at some point in the future. The second you have an evil thought by your smart sheets, before you even get out of bed in the morning in the not too distant future. I don't even know what to say about this. All right, so we're going to end the show. Dad insult the injury. Get ready for robots made with human flesh. Yes, two University of Oxford biomedical researchers are calling for robots to be built with real human tissue, and they say that the technology is there if we only choose to develop it. Writing in Science Robotics, Pierre Alexis Muthi and Andrew Carr argue that humanoid robots could be the exact tool we need to create muscle and tendon grafts that actually work. Right now, tissue engineering relies on bioreactors. We've read about those to grow sheets of cells. And these now could be grown on robots if we wanted to.
But I've actually written extensively about the dangers of all this. Bill Joy's article on the cover of Wired magazine, Why the Future Doesn't Need Us, which talked about the grave dangers of genetics, nanotechnology, and robotics, came from my book. He says at the beginning of the article he got these ideas from my book, The Age of Spiritual Machines. And chapter 8 of The Singularity is Near is called The Deeply Intertwined Promise Versus Peril of GNR, Genetics, Nanotechnology, and Robotics. I'm working extensively with the Army to develop a rapid response system to deal with the possible abuse of biotechnology. So about the same technologies that are empowering us to reprogram biology away from cancer and heart disease could also be used by a bioterrorist to reprogram a biological virus to be more deadly.